All right. Good morning. Good morning. The court calls United States v. Danilo. Counsel for the appellant, please. I was about to start an investiture ceremony, but instead we'll hear this case.
May it please the court. My name is Major Anthony Ortiz, and together with Lieutenant Colonel Jane Boomer, we represent the appellant in this case, Aaron Basic Stephen Danilo. The time spent in jail awaiting trial has detrimental impact on the individual. The time spent in jail is simply dead time. This is a quote from the Supreme Court in Barker v. Wingo, which basically summarizes the issues and the prejudice in this case. In this case, there are 350 days of dead time, the majority of which was caused by the 191-day interlocutory appeal under Article 62. The Air Force Court's ruling and the military judge ruling brings up certain questions which we will address today. Namely, number one, was the totality of the appellant's time in pretrial confinement accounted for? Number two, was his time properly weighed in the speedy trial analysis? And number three, were there justifiable reasons for delay and prejudice pursuant to Barker v. Wingo?
Okay, well, let's jump right into it. You've got a big problem here because the statute says exclude all this time for the 62 appeal unless it's utterly frivolous. Obviously, it wasn't utterly frivolous because the government won. So where does that leave us?
Well, we say that Article 62 only has a limited application for speedy trial analysis in regards to RCM 7-7. Under a Sixth Amendment analysis under Barker v. Wingo, we would argue that it does not apply.
Why not? You got any case law support for that proposition?
Well, no, Your Honor. We would cite to Barker v. Wingo.
You're making the argument, you're saying the Sixth Amendment argument would persist because an article cannot extinguish a constitutional right. Is that what you're arguing?
Yes, Your Honor. And
so you have to say that there's some right between 707 and Article 10 beyond 707 and Article 10. Is that what you're arguing?
That is what we're arguing.
A statute can't extinguish a constitutional right, but are you arguing that Congress, in the exercise of its rather broad power to make rules over the land and naval forces, can't regulate the exercise of a right?
We can. They can, and they can absolutely regulate the extra constitutional rights in this matter.
No, that's not what I'm saying. You're saying that it's just beyond statutory regulation?
The right to speedy trial, yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
So how much time, in your view, does the CCA get to process an interlocutory appeal before they have violated the constitutional right that you say cannot be extinguished by statute?
Well, again, this, as the Supreme Court emphasizes in Barker v. Wingo, that all speedy trial analysis is basically is judged on basically ad hoc basis. It's dependent upon both the charges and the length of delay. And in this case,
what's the general rule with respect to appeals, though?
The general rule in regards to
in Barker v. Wingo analysis with respect to whether you count the time on appeal or not.
There is no general rule in Barker v. Wingo, Your Honor. Barker v. Wingo deals with the incarceration period prior to trial and not the time on appellate or interlocutory review.
What about Lauhawk? How do they deal with it?
Lauhawk exempts the time from interlocutory appeals, but it's basic. But it focuses on the interlocutory appeals filed by the appellant in that case, not by the government. Here, under
how much time was spent on the interlocutory appeal in that case?
I believe 90 months in that case. In this case, it's 191 days, where much of this time has been accounted for by the Air Force Court, as the military judge notes in his findings. Inexplicably, the Appellate Government Council filed a motion for oral argument in this case, and it took the Air Force Court 90 days to even rule on this.
Are you saying the motion was frivolous?
No, Your Honor.
The government has a right to ask for oral argument, does it not?
Absolutely.
And the CCA has a right to grant it or deny it, does it not?
Absolutely.
Okay, so what's the problem here? Are you saying this motion was interposed for the purpose of delay?
No, Your Honor.
Well, then what are you complaining about?
We were saying that the time, the long time, and the inexplicably long time spent in seemingly clerical matters by the Air Force Corps should not weigh against the appellant.
Well, you're talking about an inexplicably long time, and perhaps it could have been dealt with more speedily, but you're comparing it against Loudhawk, which was 90 months. What is an unreasonably long time for an appeal?
Again, Your Honor, this would probably be on an ad hoc basis. In this case, the evidence shows that both sides were requesting expedited review, and there was no action by the Air Force Corps. As opposed to Loudhawk, we would compare this case more to United States v. Moreno.
How does Article 62B play into this, if at all?
In what manner, Your Honor?
Well, Article 62B says that the Court of Criminal Appeals will handle this in a, it's not the exact wording, expedited manner, placing, giving it a priority before all other cases.
Yes, Your Honor. We believe that this plays into the second factor of Barker v. Wingo, the reasons for delay. And the fact is, in this case, the evidence shows that 108 cases were decided before, while this case was an Article 62 appeal. Two cases being Article 62 appeals, where the evidence shows that the appellant of those cases was not in confinement.
How many of those 108 cases were merits and how many were errors?
I believe 62 were merits cases and the remaining were errors.
Okay, so you really got about 50.
Yes.
Do we have any information as to why it took that much time?
There's no information. In fact, the government appellate counsel, or the government trial counsel, actually averred in the motion that the Air Force Corps provided no explanation for the incident.
And in your view, are they required to provide an explanation?
I believe they would be, Your Honor, because the record needs to be complete in order to judge the reasons for delay.
So when we review an Article 62 appeal, do you think that we similarly have to explain why it takes us the time that it does to render a decision? And do you understand that sometimes decisions take longer to end up the decision that you end up with as opposed to a disjointed, fractured decision?
Absolutely, Your Honor. However, both with Article 62 and in this case the rules of joint practice and procedure require the courts to put essentially primacy of these Article 62 cases before other cases. And at some point, the failure to do so may even lead to arguably a due process violation for the court to fail to comply with its own rules.
Really?
In our opinion, yes, Your Honor. But at some point, these factors must be known to the court in order for them to judge a Barker v. Wingo violation under speedy trial.
Just so that we're clear, in your view, in a perfect world, what would the rule look like that the CCA would operate under when processing an Article 62 appeal? How much time would they have, and how would they need to justify the time that they had taken?
In a perfect world, while we would not argue that a set time frame a la Moreno or the Burton pre-1984 MCM would apply. Again, this we would have a more flexible standard for Article 62 appeals that we would argue because all speedy trial issues are judged on a case-by-case basis.
What is your prejudice argument if you were to get to prejudice in the Barker v. Wingo analysis?
Here the prejudice argument is that the appellant spent 2 weeks over his, or 2 months over his judge sentence. He was not allowed participation in any good time credit programs. He also, as the military judge found, was subject to anxiety and concern for the entire 350-day period. We would highlight the fact
that anxiety concern that anybody feels in jail, or was there special anxiety and concern here?
I believe the military judge found that it was just anxiety.
So the core of your prejudice argument is 2 months spent beyond the adjudged sentence?
Yes, sir. Here, we would ask this court to consider the timeline for the court appeal, given the delays, the unaccountable delays, by the Air Force Court be held against the government. And again, we would compare this to United States v. Moreno. Moreno emphasizes the importance of protecting the right of post-trial appellate review pursuant to Article 66. And in this case, there's an even more important right, a fundamental constitutional right to speak trial. Therefore, we would ask this court to hold Moreno as analogous. And in this case, as Moreno states, the time spent on processing should be held against the Air Force Court, especially against the service corps, especially when there is time spent on merely clerical matters.
What are merely clerical matters?
Oh, for example, the Air Force Court's refusal to, or not refusal, but failure to respond within a reasonable time frame to a motion for oral argument, especially given the fact that two expedited motions were filed by the appellate government counsel. One motion was filed by the appellate defense counsel, and a joint motion, essentially joint motions, agreeing to a oral argument date were filed. It still took them 90 days. It still took them almost a month after the granting of the expedited motion for them to even rule on this. We think that is clear evidence of a long time frame by the Air Force Court in processing and pursuant to Moreno. We would ask that this time be held against the government.
How many judges did the Air Force Court have when this thing was decided by them at that level?
I believe at the time they were manned with six.
They had six. Okay.
So the military judge's finding was incorrect that they had five at the time?
They were down to five at one point.
Yes, Your Honor. Then I'm going to have to check that in my facts. I am unsure of that.
It may be that... Are you making an argument about a particular point in time, or should we rely on the military judge's findings rather than your argument for the number at the time?
The particular point in time, to if we were to choose any point, it would be after the filing of the briefs on 8 October 2010. That time, between 8 October 2010 and the eventual grant of the Article 62 appeal on 9 March 2011, was seemingly unaccounted for. And to answer, to reference the manning of the Air Force Court, this is generally, the manning of the court has generally not been held against the appellant, and nor should it be in this case. The appellant is not responsible for the manning in this.
Who is?
Ultimately the government.
And government, this some case, object in Washington, or is it a specific person who is accountable and responsible for assigning judges to a CCA?
Here, this would be the judge advocate. In this case, much like Moreno, the manning should not be held, nor should the processing by the Air Force Court be held strictly against the appellant. To hold it as time that has not been judged for speedy trial purposes is essentially to hold it against the appellant and not against the government in this case. Unless there are any further questions, may I briefly conclude?
You may, and you'll have time on rebuttal.
Here, even before the ruling of this court, two of the four Barker v. Wingo factors have been met. We would ask this court to consider the time on interlocutory appeal, especially given the Air Force Court's failure to account for any of this information, the long processing times, and the prejudice to the appellant. We would ask this court to consider those in their speedy trial analysis.
Did you say two of the Barker factors were met?
Yes, sir.
And not the other two?
Two at the outset, yes. We think that all Barker factors were met. But
oh, at the outset is, obviously. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel for the government?
I'm Lieutenant Colonel Taylor Smith, and together with Major Brian Mason, we represent the United States.
Could you speak up a little?
Yes, Your Honor. I apologize. Your Honors, appellant's allegations of error should be dismissed because the military judge properly followed the law in ruling on appellant's motion to dismiss for a Sixth Amendment violation. And because the appellant cannot show under the test under Barker versus Wingo that he suffered any prejudice and, in fact, any delays in this case were both reasonable and justified. Your Honor, to just quickly hit the first issue, in analyzing the appellant's second motion for a Sixth Amendment violation, the military judge laid out findings of fact from the date of the appellant's analysis up to the date the motion was litigated and decided it, and then stated that he would confine his ruling, or at least he would focus his ruling, on the portion of the trial that occurred after the notice of Article 62 appeal. And in doing that, the military judge simply understood his limitations as a trial judge. He simply has no authority whatsoever to counteract the ruling of a superior court. And when the Air Force Court ruled on the previous portion of appellant's time of pretrial confinement, the trial judge was bound by that ruling.
But we're not.
You are not, absolutely not, Your Honors. Which leads us, I think, directly, well, just as a final note on that, I would say that it's also clear that the judge did consider the entire time frame when he says, I've looked at the entire 12 months, appellant was in pretrial confinement, and finds he suffered no prejudice over that entire period. But as you said, Your Honor, this court is certainly not bound by the ruling of the Air Force Court, so we need to turn to the test in Barker versus Wingo.
Wasn't there some language in the military judge's order where he said that he wasn't going to consider that earlier period?
Well, I believe when he said that he wasn't going to consider that earlier period, all he's referring to is that he has no authority to make a different conclusion of law as to whether the Sixth Amendment had been violated for that period. All the judge was saying is, look, I am bound by the law of the case doctrine. I can't affect that. All I can do is look forward and analyze what happened post the government's notice of an Article 62 appeal.
So what does it mean when he said that he considered, when you argued that he considered the entire time period? Really, he didn't. He considered it from that period forward.
Well, yes, sir. That was the focus of his ruling. Okay. Absolutely. But he does have the language in there saying that, yes, I did consider
it. It was a little confusing, actually.
Yes, sir.
You're not suggesting that the military judge, I should ask you more of a question. In your view, could the military judge have said, I'm bound by the CCA's ruling with respect to the pre-appeal time period, but when I add that time to this other time, which I think was unreasonable, I still find that together it's a violation.
Yes, ma'am. I believe that's what
I understand that that's not what he said, but is it your view that he could have done that?
Yes, I believe he could have. And I believe that was his meaning, although it was not perhaps very artfully stated. But I believe that's what he was attempting to do.
Okay, well, let's suppose, just for the sake of argument, that you could read his order a different way, to say that he didn't consider that time at all.
Yes, ma'am.
Explain why you might still win anyway.
Well, even if he didn't consider that time frame, I look at it, maybe you could call it the legal version of the transitive property. I'm not a great math person, but...
Well, we're reviewing it de novo.
Or de novo.
Well, I'm asking, are we reviewing it de novo or some other way?
Well, I believe this court can... Any Sixth Amendment for conclusion law, I believe it's a de novo review, and that this court has that authority to look at it. But if the military judge has simply said, I'm not considering this period, I think that's fine because the Air Force Court had already ruled and stated that this is not a Sixth Amendment violation. There's no problem with that. So if that period of time is fine, and the military judge found that the time after the notice of Article 62 was fine, then this conglomeration of the two together is also fine. There's just nothing to separate the two to make them, you know, somehow wrong when they're both correct standing alone. But of course, as you're saying, Your Honor, this court is not bound by what was stated at the Air Force Court, which leads us into this analysis of Barker versus Wingo. And in looking at that, government agrees that the appellant certainly hit the third prong of that test. And he requested speedy trial, there's no question about it. And he...
And you agree that, just to make sure that we don't have factual disputes, that while the thing, Article 62, was pending before the CCA, both the government and the appellant three times moved for expedited whatever?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, that is correct. And, you know, really, all we're talking about in for the Barker versus Domingo test is the extent that the second and the fourth prongs apply, the reasons for the delay, and whether the appellant actually suffered any prejudice in this case.
Perhaps because it's just cleaner and quicker. In the abstract, without arguing the facts yet, if one serves time in jail beyond their adjudged sentence when they shouldn't, is that not prejudicial?
Your Honor, I don't think so. Not in a pretrial confinement sense. And in this, I think we need to look maybe a little bit beyond just sort of the theoretical discussion and look at the fact that a PTA was submitted in this case for time served. And when we look at the case of United States versus Kenzen, it tells us that a PTA is indicative of what an accused feels is appropriate. And that case is actually interesting because the court said we can perhaps judicially notice that our sentences routinely come in under what PTA caps are. But nevertheless, the PTA is indicative of this.
So because he thought he should get 14 months, he wasn't prejudiced by the fact that he was locked up 2 months longer than he should have been?
Well, no, Your Honor. It
sounds like natural law of some sort.
To a degree, Your Honor, I think what we run into is that the appellant could just have easily been sentenced to, for example, 20 months.
Right, but he wasn't.
I agree, Your Honor, but the fact is that the pretrial confinement, his period in pretrial, is, first of all, it's not punishment. It's simply to hold him there to ensure that he is present for trial. That is the main purpose of pretrial confinement. The fact that it took longer than his actual sentence to get to trial doesn't mean that he was prejudiced in the sense that he was held under a particular sentence for a crime. It simply means that they had to hold him in a position where they could make sure he was available for trial up until the point the sentence was actually adjudged.
But had the CCA acted as it was required to act under Article 62B, he would not have had that extra 2 month period and there wouldn't be a prejudice argument.
Well, Your Honor, I think the Air Force Corps did act in the way that they were required to act under 62B.
Okay, what is the language of 62B as far as it talking about processing the case?
Yes, sir. And I think that 62B says that the Air Force Corps is required, well, any service corps is required to process them expeditiously when practical.
Priority over other proceedings are practical, right?
Yeah, that
priority.
Is
okay.
All
yes.
Other proceedings.
Yes, sir.
Okay, and where in the record do we have any indication as to why this was impracticable, particularly since there were a number of other cases that were decided?
Yes, sir. We have none. There's okay. Nothing in the record to explain why the Air Force Court took the time period it did.
So, but you would agree with the facts in the record about the other cases being decided? Erroneous or whatever.
No, sir, that's correct. But I would add the caveat that was put in earlier of the majority of those were merits cases. I would also add we don't know what the panel distinctions were for these
several
cases.
So we can rely on the military justice findings that there are 100 cases decided in the time period in question?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah, that is correct.
What about the fact that there were four unfilled positions out of the nine as stated in the military judge's findings?
I believe that's also correct, Your Honor. Yes, sir.
Counsel, could you just give me what the government's interpretation of Article 62B is? What does that mean, the language that we're talking about?
I think when we're looking at, when we're analyzing an Article 62 claim in the sense, I think we need to turn to example, we look at United States versus Ladhawk, which tells us we look under Barker versus Wingo test for analyzing appellate.
But would it be safe to say that it means that, or it reflects the general rule that government appeals are disfavored, and that when the government appeals, the appeal should be expedited?
Well, of course, being on the government side, I hate to think the government appeals are disfavored. I realize that they should be minimized, but I do agree that Article 62 says that they should be expedited. Yes, sir, I agree with that. But when we're analyzing this question, we're looking at these Barker versus Wingo factors, and we also need to look at what was stated in United States versus Moreno and United States versus Dunbar, which states that when we look at the time taken by an appellate court in its review, it's granted a flexible review. And we build on that. Dunbar explains to us that this flexible review exists because of the hesitancy to pierce the shroud of judicial decision-making.
Well, in Moreno, isn't Moreno basically this case? I mean, in Moreno, the Navy Court was starved of resources. Congress hauled the TJAG in, beat him up. Eventually something happened. Now the Air Force Court is starved of resources. I don't know whether Congress has hauled the TJAG in and beat him up, but eventually they got more judges.
Yes, sir.
What's the difference?
Well, to a degree, I don't think there is a difference. I think Moreno is actually a great analogy to this case. And I think when we look at Moreno, what is fair to argue is that in Moreno, this court established 18 months as presumptively prejudicial, this time period. Now, granted, that's an Article 66 review, and in this case, we're talking an Article 62 review for expeditious. But I think it's only fair to say that if 18 months is the presumptive cutoff date for a normal Article 66 appeal, then certainly 6 months the process in Article 62 qualifies as expeditious.
Regardless of the preference given in 62B.
Yes, sir. Well, I think 6 months.
And regardless of the facts.
Well, I think facts can certainly weigh into the case.
If there are no judges at the CCA and it took 6 months, you would say no problem.
Obviously there was.
And then okay.
Yes, sir. No, you're right. There is a problem in a situation like that.
How does the government read 62C?
In what sense, Your Honor?
I mean, what's excludable?
Well, I think Article 10 is time is clearly excludable.
Say again, I couldn't hear you.
Time taken for an Article 62 appeal, Article 10 does not apply in that situation. I think.
Okay, what about Sixth Amendment? The appellant is saying that it's simply irrelevant to Sixth Amendment analysis. Does government agree?
Your Honor, I do agree. I think the Sixth Amendment does apply regardless.
But saying it applies is a truism. How does it apply? You're saying the statute has no application to a Sixth Amendment analysis.
Yes, I do say that, Your Honor.
Okay.
Yeah, I do not believe that Article 62 can abrogate the Sixth Amendment.
Well, again, you know, it can't abrogate the Sixth Amendment, but that's not really what I'm asking.
Well,
you've said your position.
Yes,
go ahead.
Your Honor, and I think.
Let me try asking it a different way.
Yes,
do you think that the statute has no bearing on the Sixth Amendment analysis of an Article 62 time period?
Yes, ma'am. Well, in that degree, I think it does. It's a factor that we can consider that Congress has come out and said that this speedy trial time for an Article 62 is not to be considered, and it's a factor that I think can be considered in analyzing the full Barker versus Wingo test.
So it factors into two, reason for delay. Is that how it relates to the Sixth Amendment?
Yes, sir.
Plan?
Yes, sir. But even building on that, again, just to go back, I think what we have here is a question of the Air Force Court doing what they needed to do. And under that, we presume the trial judge know and apply the law. And if we can presume that for a trial judge, I think it's only fair to say that an appellate judge knows and be presumed to know and apply the law.
What if it had taken them 18 months? Would you be making the same argument?
Well, Your Honor, I think I would under the Sixth Amendment. I think eventually we would reach a due process type of analysis, which differs from a Sixth Amendment analysis. But I think under the Sixth Amendment, I would still be making the same argument. Eventually, you reach a point, of course, where the Fifth Amendment would be violated, but that's not the situation we have here.
But what about priority over other proceedings?
Well,
is it 1,066 appeals coming out before the 62 that indicates lack of priority over other proceedings, or when? Do you get the question?
No. Yeah, I understand your question, but I think that's practically impossible. I don't think we can put a number on it to begin with. I think this is just a situation where we need to analyze just what we have at hand. And in this case, what we have is an appellate court that realized that expedited review has been requested and it was granted. And additionally,
expedited review was requested and granted. Why did they request it a total of 6 times then?
Well,
3 for each side if it was granted.
That
doesn't sound very expedited if you have to ask 3 times.
Again, Your Honor, we don't know what the appellate court was actually...
No, we don't know what, but you're saying it was expedited, but it's hard to make the case on the facts in this record. If the facts are there were three requests by both sides for expedited review, I think it's very hard for you to turn around and say there was expedited review.
Well, sir, I do think there was expedited review, and my reasons for this are because regardless of how many times, for example, an appellant asks for a speedy trial, you don't get to pick your date. You don't get to set your date and say, I'm going tomorrow. That's the date I want. So even though expedited review was requested and eventually granted...
And note that both sides are requesting it.
Yes, sir, both sides.
So the government, to the government's credit, I mean, this is, they're both seeing it the same way.
Yes, sir.
In each instance that they requested expedited review, did they request a specific date for argument or not?
I don't believe in every case, but there was a specific request for argument date that happened, and the actual, if I'm remembering this correctly, the actual date of argument occurred about a week after what was suggested for the oral argument date. But simply because the government wants to go faster and the appellant wants to go faster in this case does not mean that the Air Force Court is suddenly bound to pull out all the stops.
Now, aren't they bound to pull out all the stops?
Well,
62B?
Again, there's the when practical, a caveat attached to Article 62. So yes, they need to move forward and they need to move forward expeditiously. Unfortunately, we don't know why they took the time that they needed to do, and I don't believe...
Which way should that militate?
I believe that should militate in favor of the Air Force Court. Absent some sort of showing that there was negligence on their part or some specific showing that there was bad faith on their part, I think that an appellate court is entitled to the presumption that they know and follow the law.
Well, the appellant is suggesting that they should be required to explain themselves as to their decision-making and the time that it took and why they did or did not grant these requests at a particular moment in time. What is the government's view of that?
I disagree with that. I don't believe the Air Force Corps should be required to sort of prove themselves, absent what I was just mentioning, of some sort of evidence of negligence or bad faith on their part.
Let's say that the delay was 3 years and the appellant petitioned them, asking them for expedited review, and asked them why it wasn't being done pursuant to Article 62B. Is there any requirement then on the CCA for that extended delay to give any reasons? Because it's the reasons that will help us decide whether or not it was practicable.
Yes, sir. No, I agree with... I understand that it would perhaps be helpful, but I don't think that this is the type of thing that the Air Force Court or any court should be prying is maybe a hard word, should be digging into. And I would point to, for example, United States versus Loudhawk, where we had just a 4-year delay simply for the government's appeal in that case, let alone all the other appeals, and the appellate courts were never required to explain themselves.
So the reasons for the delay, and certainly in Loudhawk, they don't have a comparable position. Provision than 62B.
Yes, sir.
But it's the government's position that regardless of the time it takes, the delay is unreviewable by this court.
I believe that's correct, absent the showing of bad faith or something along those lines.
Does the appellant have a mechanism to make the CCA act any faster?
Other than requesting expedited review, I don't believe there are. They could always come to this court and file some sort of writ to order the Air Force Court to move more quickly. But
was that done in this case?
That was not done in this case. No, ma'am.
Well, and if there's nothing on the record, and you're saying they can't be compelled to put anything on the record, and they come to us and say, do something, and we say, what's here, other than an unexplained delay?
Yes, sir.
So, okay.
Yes, sir. Your Honor, if I can mention just very briefly the issue of prejudice, and just simply say there is no prejudice in this case whatsoever. Any anxiety alleged by the appellant, he doesn't cite to anything particularized. He doesn't cite to anything beyond what would be felt by anyone in pretrial confinement. And likewise, this list of oppressive pretrial conditions that he lists is nothing more than a laundry list. The only evidence presented on oppressive conditions was appellant 2 weeks without having a prescription refilled. But as the NCO, a confinement official, stated, we have that cleared up. And he never alleged that his defense was harmed in any way.
And the fact that he spent 2 months in pretrial confinement longer than his sentence was somehow beneficial to him?
Well, Your Honor, I don't mean to, if I can answer, I see I'm out of time, if I can answer.
Please,
I don't mean this to sound flippant in any way, but when you read his unsworn statement, and to some degree it was good for him, because he was invited by the military judge to argue oppressive pretrial confinement conditions. Defense counsel didn't do it, and he didn't raise it in his unsworn. His unsworn, however, is full of, I took this time to better myself, I'm now a better person because of this time I spent in here. So to a degree, I think that plays against the idea that it's straight up prejudicial, but I'd also fall back on what I cited earlier about United States versus Smith.
So it's reformation through labor.
Well, it would be personal choice, Your Honor, what he did in that case, but. Your Honor,
let's just be clear. What is your primary argument for why the 2 months is not prejudicial? Is it because somehow pretrial is not punishment?
That is my main argument, Your Honor. Pretrial is not punishment. He was simply in pretrial to ensure that his presence, to ensure his
So it's an apples and orange thing, and the government's view is he did not serve 2 months more than required because the pretrial doesn't count as serving a sentence.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And barring any further questions, that concludes my remarks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel for the appellant. Why don't you start with that one? Start with the pretrial confinement is not punishment, therefore he did not serve 2 months beyond whatever.
Well, Your Honor, of course our view is that the pretrial, any serving of additional confinement over the judge is based on this case law, and I believe under the past case law has been found to be prejudicial to the appellant.
So it would be prejudicial in every case for Barker versus Mingo purposes, whenever, so that the rule would be whenever a person's confinement exceeds what the sentence that is pretrial confinement exceeds the sentence that is ultimately adjudged, they have therefore shown the Sixth Amendment violation?
At least under the prejudice prong. There is some prejudice for an appellant to serve over as a judge.
Are you in all cases or just in Article 62 cases where the three other factors otherwise cut in the appellant's case?
Well, I believe in all cases, Your Honor, for an accused to serve over in a judge sentence.
And you said you had some cases that have held that way?
I believe they're mainly at the CCA level where the appellant serves over his minimum release date. Generally, they have been, to my knowledge, and again, they are not cited in our brief, and I would request that I be able to submit a supplemental citation of authority. They have been afforded relief under Article 66.
As an aside, counsel, was there ever a motion made for illegal pretrial confinement in this case?
There was, however, it was waived pursuant to the pretrial agreement. There was a motion under Article 13 and Article 12.
Well, appeal of those issues was waived.
Yes,
but the motions were made to the military judge.
There was a motion for release from confinement, I believe. I don't believe that the actual motion was made at the second part of the hearing. However, the military judge made no specific findings of fact to the onerous conditions of confinement, and we would request, if this court should want, a Dubé hearing if those conditions need to be discerned.
I wasn't asking about the conditions. I was asking about the fact of pretrial confinement itself.
No, Your Honor, I don't believe motions were filed for pretrial.
For the mere fact of pretrial confinement.
Yes, Your Honor. Here, the Air Force Court seemingly does not even address its own delays. We think that there is absolutely an argument that they should. In fact, and it's despite being requested by appellate government or by government counsel to address these in regards to the motion, the military judge notes that they make no reference or make no findings or make no response to that request. Even in the decision of appeal, the government or the Air Force Corps essentially punts on the reasons for delay in the Barker v. Mingo analysis.
So if the CCA were to say it was just simply part of the deliberative process, does that end the discussion and the analysis?
We would think it is a ruling. However, in our view, would not end the process in this case. Reasons for delay must be discerned, and especially in this case when there is, in our view, an unusually long time of interlocutory appeal, especially in regards to ruling on seemingly clerical motions.
So when we review appeals of Article 62 appeals, just as a matter of practice, we also try and prioritize them. You would agree with that, right?
Yes, sir.
So do you think that we similarly need to address, in our opinions, why it has or has not taken us 3 months versus 6 months versus 9 months to render a decision?
Not every case, Your Honor. I believe in cases.
But why?
Because in cases where there's an unusually long processing time, that essentially raises the issue of, and especially in this case where it's raised by in the appellant brief. In this case, we directly cited to the Air Force Court's processing time. However, the only response they made pursuant to Barker v. Wingo was, quote, both parties have equally compelling argument to support the second factor.
So we have this case now, and it's a speedy trial case, and we decide for whatever reason, because for a good reason, a bad reason, or no reason at all, we don't render our decision until August 30th. Do we have to say why?
In that case, Your Honor, again, I don't believe that a court is required in every circumstance to essentially account for their time spent on an interview.
Does the language of Article 62B reference this court as well as the CCA?
I'm sure I have to look at that, Your Honor. It does not reference this court, Your Honor. Only the Court of Criminal Appeals. Unless there are any further questions?
If there are no further questions, the Court thanks both counsel. The case is now submitted, and the Court will stand in recess until 3:30 today. Thank you very much.
Court stands in recess until 3:30 p.m.